Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Deborah and Barak. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thank you much, Bob. We have been studying the book of Judges, and in this book we have a record of the early history, the first centuries of the children of Israel and the land of Israel. And we've seen these leaders God chose, who are called judges. They ruled under Jehovah, the true king. And through the lives, activity, and rule of these judges, we can learn about God's works and ways. So we get to Judges chapter 4 and Deborah. We read, "When Ehud was dead, the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord." So remember, we saw Ehud was the second judge, and we saw some of his career. And then we saw that he was followed by Shamgar, the third judge. So it seems that after Ehud was dead, while Shamgar was perhaps still alive, the children of Israel started to turn away again. So that once he too was dead, they then were made captives. Now evil here, again, is the evil, which means idolatry, which was their betrayal of the Lord, their rebellion against him. And so once again, when they do this, verse 2, "So the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who dwelt in Harosheth Hagoyim." So this time, the foreign power that Israel is oppressed by is Jabin, which means God considers. And this one we read was actually a Canaanite ruler. Remember the last time, the oppression came from outside of Israel, from Ammon and Moab to the east. But this time, the ruler actually is from the Canaanites. Well, who are the Canaanites? Well, they were the people that Israel is supposed to destroy out of the land. So their next oppressor is one of those that they were supposed to destroy and didn't. Remember, many of these Canaanite nations, instead of destroying them and casting them out of the land as they were commanded to do, they said, "Oh, that's too hard," and they made a league with them. And because they were so powerful, they made them their servants, and they had to pay tribute, but they left them in the land. Well, now this former servant becomes powerful, and he enslaves his former rulers. So this Canaanite that they failed to destroy when they could have, now is the one oppressing them. And Hazor, where he was ruling from, is actually in Naphtali, which was one of Israel's tribal territories. So right there from among them, one of these Canaanite peoples they didn't cast out is oppressing them. Now Jabin's commander is Sisera, and his name actually means battlefield. So perhaps this was a title that he was given, Captain Battlefield, because of his success in war. Maybe not his given name. Now they rule from Harosheth Hagoyim, which means woodland. And again, this was in northern Israel. Hagoyim means of the Gentiles. But this doesn't have to mean that it was not in the land of Israel. Remember, in Matthew 4:15, it calls the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. So Galilee, which was a place in Israel in the New Testament, is called of the Gentiles, which here is Hagoyim. So this doesn't mean, of the nations, doesn't mean it isn't inside Israel. And it certainly was. Verse 3, "And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, for Jabin had 900 chariots of iron, and for 20 years he had harshly oppressed the children of Israel." So the sons of Israel, their representatives, they cry out to the Lord for help because they are being oppressed. Now Jabin, we read, had 900 chariots of iron, and this was his military advantage. Remember, the Lord had forbidden Israel to have horses. And horses were the military advantage of the day. If you were on horseback, you were in a much more favorable position than a soldier on foot. And the same thing from a chariot. So that was the military advantage, but Israel was not supposed to take it. Why? Because they were to have the Lord as their advantage. He was supposed to be their secret weapon. But they had given him up. So Jabin, with his advantage, defeats them. And for 20 years, he harshly oppresses them. So this is a 20 years oppression, and it's to be added up to the previous years of oppression that we've seen that all add up to 93, the years that Israel was sold into the hand of their enemies, therefore didn't belong to the Lord, and so the On Odi, the according to the Lord clock stopped, as we talked a couple weeks ago. Now at this time, Israel had a ruler, when you find out in verse 4 who it was. It says, now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lappidoth, was judging Israel at that time. So here we read of one named Deborah who judged Israel. Now there are some who come to faith in Christ who are nevertheless feminists, at least the modern definition of feminism, which it seems to me wants to make women as much like men as possible, so I'm not sure why exactly it's called feminism. They seem to rather despise things that are particularly feminine. But anyway, it's called feminism, and the feminist believers today don't like the fact that so often the Bible and God put men in charge and not women. So they go and they say, aha, but look at Deborah, the judge. She was a woman ruler. See, there could be women rulers in the Bible. And so they point to Deborah. But I'm not so sure about this. After all, in the Old Testament, we have examples of hundreds of people who were put in position of rulership, many of them by God. And now against these hundreds of examples, we have one example of a woman put in charge. And this is supposed to mean something. Seems to me it's more like the exception that proves the rule. Now in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 32, it is Barak, not Deborah, who is listed in the Hall of Fame of Faith. And Barak is praised for his faith, not Deborah. Now this isn't because there aren't women in the list in Hebrews 11, because there are. Multiple times there are women listed as women of faith. But it's Barak, not Deborah, who's listed in Hebrews 11. So I would ask the question, this female judge that people like to point to and say, see, women could be rulers. Did she meet the criteria for a judge? That's the basic question. Did she meet the criteria? What was the criteria for a judge? Well, we had it back in Judges chapter 2 and verses 16 and 18. And in Judges 2:16, it says, nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges who delivered them out of the hand of those who plundered them. So it says the judges delivered them out of the hand of their plunderers. And then again in Judges 2:18, and when the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. And yet here we have Deborah judging Israel, and yet Israel is not delivered. Israel is not rescued from the hands of those who plundered them. So though Deborah was judging Israel, was she really a judge? And if you go by the criteria of Judges 2:16 and 18, she wasn't. She was leading them, yes. She was judging them, yes, but she hadn't delivered them. So she was not meeting the criteria for a judge. So I don't call Deborah the fourth judge. I call Barak the fourth judge. Because though Deborah judged Israel, she didn't deliver them. Now, why was a woman judging Israel this time? And as we look more closely at this history, and we'll see it when we get to chapter 5, the Song of Deborah and Barak, I believe that this particular oppression was especially against the women. It was targeted against them. And we can see that in Judges 5:30. One of the women of Sisera speaks, and she says, are they not finding and dividing the spoil? To every man a girl or two. For Sisera plundered of dyed garments. So Sisera's mother describes it that their plunder is a girl or two for every man, as well as these fancy garments, which of course is what she got out of it. Now, the Canaanites were apparently indulging in polygamy, multiple wives. And the problem with polygamy when a society goes into that is, well, the birth rate between men and women is basically one apiece. Now, it's not exactly that, but it's very, very close. So if you're going to have polygamy, where are these extra wives going to come from? And you basically have two options. The first is that only the rich men get to have wives. The rich, the powerful, they snatch up all the women, and the poor man, he just has to do without. Or your other option is to take somebody else's women. You might only have 50-50 men to women. You go into some other nation, steal their women, and make them the extra women. So these are your two choices for polygamy. And it seems that the Canaanites were using the second choice. They were attacking Israel, kidnapping their women, and making them multiple wives for themselves. Now, note on, they weren't giving them the privilege of full wives. They were making them slave wives or concubines. But that's what they were doing. And so this oppression was against the women in Israel, and the men were failing to protect them. And of course, they couldn't because they had abandoned the Lord, so they had lost their strength to battle. And so in this situation where the women being oppressed and the men are not protecting them, the Lord raises a prophetess, a female judge, out of the women to lead them. And this is to humiliate the men for their failure. And yet this was in this special situation. When God puts a woman in charge, it's basically to humiliate the men. It's not because he does it equally. He puts a man or a woman in charge equally. Now, as we see how God deals with the gender roles, he puts men basically in charge of external relations of the family. Men are in charge when it comes to government and when it comes to religion. The men represent the family. And that is outside the home. However, inside the home, the women have the power. As Paul says in 1 Timothy 5:14, he says that he desires the younger widows to marry, bear children, and manage the house. And that word in Greek actually means to be a tyrant at home. Now, tyrant back in those days, that didn't have the negative connotation it has now. It just meant a ruler, not an oppressive one. But he says, I want the women to rule inside the home. And that's what Paul and that's what God wanted. But outside the home, regarding government and religion, it was always the men. So Deborah was an exception because of the men's failure. Verse 5, and she would sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Beth-El in the mountains of Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. So Deborah's court was under a palm tree. And this was between Ramah, which means hill, and Beth-El, which means house of God. And these two cities are on one side and on the other side of the border between Benjamin and Ephraim. And she was judging kind of right between them on that border of Benjamin and Ephraim. Well, now we are introduced to the fourth judge, Barak, the one who's actually going to deliver them from their enemies, in verse 6. Then she sent and called for Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord God of Israel commanded, go and deploy troops at Mount Tabor. Take with you 10,000 men of the sons of Naphtali and of the sons of Zebulun. So she calls for Barak. Barak means lightning. And he is the son of Abinoam, which means my father is the light. I think that's a pretty good name. You name your kid. What should I name my kid? I'll name him my dad is awesome. I'm guessing maybe it was his father who named him. Well, you know, it could be he was a little infant. His father was playing him and he was just loving it. He was giggling and laughing. So they called him Abinoam, my father is the light. I understand they waited until sometime after birth to name a child. They'd wait to see characteristics come out. So maybe this child seemed to really love his father. But anyway, Barak was the son of Abinoam. My father is the light. He was from Kadesh, which means holy place. And that was a place in Naphtali. Well, he is told to gather forces at Mount Tabor. Tabor means a lofty mound. And right now, Israel sells a Tabor rifle named after Mount Tabor in Israel. Now, Mount Tabor was between Zebulun and Naphtali. So again, he is to gather forces there, and he is to draw his army from these two tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali. Verse 7, and against you I will deploy Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his multitude at the river Kishon, and I will deliver him into your hand. So the Lord is going to bring about the confrontation. He's going to draw Sisera to the battle at the Kishon River, which means the winding or the twisting river. And there he's going to be helpless before Israel. That's what it means to be given into their hand, given into their power, and be helpless. Verse 8, and Barak said to her, if you will go with me, then I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go. So Barak has his orders from the Lord, but he says, I don't want to go unless you go too, Deborah. Well, we can see the attitude of the men in Israel. They're hiding behind the women's skirts. And they're letting the women take the brunt of the oppression. Well, here is Barak doing the same thing. He's saying, I'm not going to go to battle unless you go with me. Well, that was far from courageous. Verse 9, so she said, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, there will be no glory for you in the journey you are taking, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. So Deborah agrees she will accompany him, but there is a punishment for his lack of courage, and that is that he's not going to get the glory of the victory. Instead, the glory of defeating Sisera is going to go into the hand of a woman. Now, we'll see who that woman is later. That's actually not Deborah. That's a different woman. But this is fitting in this case. Where the men were being remiss, the Lord is going to use a woman to ultimately bring about their release. Verse 10, and Barak called Zebulun and Naphtali to Kedesh. He went up with 10,000 men under his command, and Deborah went up with him. So Barak obeys, and he gathers these 10,000 men out of Zebulun and Naphtali, just as the Lord said. And they yield to him as commander, and Deborah goes with him, like she said. Verse 11, now Heber the Kenite, of the children of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, had separated himself from the Kenites, and pitched his tent near the terebinth tree at Zaanaim, which is beside Kadesh. So here we read of a man named Heber, which means comrade. He is a Kenite, who were the Smiths, but they were descended from Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses. Hobab means cherished or loved. And he was actually the son of the father-in-law of Moses, or Moses' brother-in-law. So we could kind of put that in as ellipsis. He was the son of Reuel, Moses' father-in-law. And he had journeyed with Israel to their land and dwelt among them. Now, we read earlier in Judges that the Kenites had dwelt among those of Judah. But Heber has apparently separated himself from the rest of his kind. For some reason, we're not told why. And he is camping in the plain of Zaanaim, which means removings. Fitting for somebody who removed himself from his people. And it was actually in Naphtali near Kedesh, whereas the other Kenites were in Judah. Now, this verse might seem a little bit out of place, but it's setting up verse 17. So we'll know what's going on when we get there. But verse 12, we go back to the battle. And they reported to Sisera that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor. So Sisera's spies, or his informants, they tell him that Barak has done this, that he's gathered these men and has gone to Mount Tabor. This is clearly a threat. So Sisera, the commander, knows he needs to do something. Verse 13, so Sisera gathered together all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the people who were with him, from Harosheth Hagoyim to the river Kishon. So Sisera, just as the Lord said, he gathers together his chariots, these 900 chariots that were their military advantage over the Israelites, whereas the Israelites' advantage was supposed to be the Lord. Then he gathers all his men and all the people from Harosheth Hagoyim, and he brings them to the river Kishon, just like the Lord said. Verse 14, then Deborah said to Barak, up! For this is the day in which the Lord has delivered Sisera into your hand. Has not the Lord gone out before you? So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. So Deborah calls him to go into action and says, today is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hand today. So Deborah leaves Mount Tabor with his 10,000 men to attack Sisera. Verse 15, and the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army with the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and fled away on foot. So Barak defeats Sisera, along with all his 900 chariots and along with all his army, just as Jehovah had said. So Sisera apparently is forced to abandon his chariot and flee away on foot. So much for the courageous Captain Battlefield. He runs from his chariot like a scared puppy. Verse 16, but Barak pursued the chariots and the army as far as Harosheth Hagoyim. And all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. So Sisera's army tries to flee too, but they are wiped out to a man. The Israelites are totally victorious. But what about Sisera? Verse 17. However, Sisera had fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between Jabin, king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite. So Sisera was... he's fleeing away, he reaches the tent of Jael. Now, Jael means a mountain goat, where it's basically the ibex mountain goat. And she is the wife of Heber the Kenite that we read about in verse 11. And it seems that this Heber the Kenite has actually made a league, or he's at peace with Jabin, the king of Hazor. I don't know why that was. Perhaps because they were both non-Israelites living in the Israelite land. But he shouldn't have been on his side. He should have sided with the Israelites. But his wife is wiser than he is. Verse 18, and Jael went out to meet Sisera and said to him, turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, do not fear. And when he had turned aside with her into the tent, she covered him with a blanket. So she calls him into her own tent. And notice she has her own tent. Remember we saw this, that the women had their own tent or their own chambers back in Song of Solomon 3:4, where the Shulamite girl took her beloved into her mother's chamber. And we said that's the one place her brothers wouldn't go. They wouldn't be caught dead in their mother's chambers. So she can have her meeting with her lover, where her brothers will not be able to stop them, and yet, of course, her mother's there to be their chaperone. But the same thing here, Jael has her own tent. So she brings him in there, a very bold thing to do. No one but her husband or one of her boy children, not grown up yet, should be able to come into her tent. Otherwise, it should be just women. So she brings him in, and then she covers him over with a blanket, it says. That's more like a rug or a thick coverlet. Of course, it would be supposedly to hide him, but then he can't see what she's doing either under there. Then verse 19, then he said to her, please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty. So she opened a jug of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him. So he wants water to drink, and she gives him milk instead. Notice her defiance. She doesn't do anything exactly like he tells her to do. And in chapter 5, we'll even see that this was curdled milk. It wasn't even good milk. Verse 20, so he said to her, stand at the door of the tent, and if any man comes and inquires of you and says, is there any man here? You shall say no. So he is exhausted from the battle, and he asks her to keep a lookout for him and to lie for him if anyone comes looking for him. And he is going to try to rest. What does she do? Does she obey this command? No. Verse 21. Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand and went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple and went down into the ground, for he was fast asleep and weary. So he died. So as he fell asleep, and he was fast asleep, being tired out from the battle, Jael, Heber's wife, takes a tent peg and a hammer. And understand, women at the time were the ones who would erect the tents. And in fact, I've read that that's even still true today among nomadic peoples, is that it's the women who erect the tents. So this is something she's proficient at. So she takes this tent peg, she takes a hammer, she goes to him, and she drives the tent peg through his temple and into the ground. Now that was a mighty blow struck by this woman for the women in Israel. And her husband might have been blind to what was going on to the Israelites and their women, but she was not. And so she strikes a blow for all the women of Israel, and a courageous blow it was. And Barak gets there too late, just like the Lord had said. Verse 22, and then as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to meet him and said to him, come, I will show you the man whom you seek. And when he went into her tent, there lay Sisera, dead with a peg in his temple. So Barak arrives too late to get the glory of killing Sisera. Just like the Lord had said, Captain Battlefield was already dead at the hands of a woman at the hands of Jael. So in this portion, we see that Deborah judged Israel, but she did not deliver Israel. That was up to Barak, the fourth judge. This is an exception to men always being chosen as rulers, but it was for a good purpose, because the oppression was largely against the women of Israel, and the men were wimping out and not, as we would say, wearing the pants and doing what needed to be done. Barak, the choice to deliver Israel, was willing to fight only with Deborah's help. So again, showing the lack of courage of the men of Israel. Well, men of God, will you be courageous on behalf of the woman God has given you? Jehovah gives the victory to the courageous Jael, who strikes a blow for the women of Israel. Women of God, will you be courageous for your God and for your daughters? So here was the key. The Lord was on their side, and when he was, then Israel won. Let's remember, we need him on our side, too.
Once again, the Lord delivers Israel from their pagan oppressors, but this time by using a woman. Yes, when the men in Israel failed in their responsibility to protect the women, God shames the men and gives the victory over their enemy to a woman. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on Deborah and Barak. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the Book of Judges with The Song of Deborah and Barak. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you are learning that the more you study God's Word, the more you can know God. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.